next speaker is Alejandro Perez from Marseille, and he is going to tell us about regulated dependence in quantum gravity and non-perturbative renormalizability, some possible new perspectives.
Okay, thank you very much, Abhay. And I'd like to thank the organizers for inviting me to this wonderful place and this wonderful conference. And today I want to present some ideas which have to do with work in progress towards some exploration in trying to solve this, a problem that I believe is very important in non-perturbative quantum gravity. So I will present some concrete results, but the exploration is not finished. So I start with the motivation, and then I go ahead with more concrete results. The concrete results, this is the reason why there is a subtitle here. Probably you cannot read it. I thought that green was going to be readable. But background-independent string-like matter coupled to four-dimensional BF theory, which is a certain model I will describe in more detail in the second part of the talk. So, okay, one of the most important results of loop quantum gravity is what Thomas showed, Thomas' rigorous quantization of the Hamiltonian constraint in the absence of any ultraviolet divergences in the process. And it's a beautiful example where we see that how important background independence and diffeomorphism invariance, the important role of background independence and diffeomorphism invariance in the process. So this is a little cartoon for those who know these things in more detail. I'm not going to describe this in more detail as Thomas. Yes. It's better there? Okay, so there is no ultraviolet problem in loop quantum gravity. However, the issue of renormalizability, I will argue, remains open. And I think this is something that has been emphasized by Thomas and has been mentioned by Thomas and by Abhay also in his their presentations. So it's true that loop quantum gravity is ultraviolet finite, but there are ambiguities in the regularization process, in the quantization process of the constraints of the theory. And these ambiguities happen to be, or seem to be, an infinite dimensional space of ambiguities. Now, what we don't know is whether these ambiguities have any effect in the physical theory, namely when we compute physical amplitudes. This is unknown, and this is something that that is being explored. But this, and this is the issue that remains open when it regarding the renormalizability of the formulation. The problem appears also in the covariant formulation of spin form models, where we have ultraviolet finiteness again. However, in order to introduce these models, we need to introduce a discretization, again a regulator. And for the interesting models, namely the models that have to do with gravity, like the Barbin-Gray models and other models, there is discretization dependence. So essentially, the amplitude depends on the triangulation we work with. This is very similar to what happens in lattice gauge theories, but it is very different in the sense that the notion of the continuum limit here, because of background independence, is very different. So in lattice gauge theories, we can take the dimensional full parameter that has to do with the lattice constant to zero and explore whether this limit is well defined, and we see that those ambiguities that have to do with the regularization process do not have any effect in physics, precisely because the Jahn-Mills theory is renormalizable. These kind of arguments do not go through in the background-independent context. So people, there are many ideas concerning how to take the continuum limit in spin forms, and one important proposal is that of the group field theory formulation. So in the group field theory formulation, one introduces an auxiliary field theory, which has the form of the blue part of this action I wrote here. It has a quadratic term and a term phi to the fifth, and it has the beautiful property of reproducing in the perturbative. If one computes endpoint functions of this field theory, in a perturbative fashion, one obtains that each Feynman diagram is in one-to-one correspondence, so to say, to the amplitudes one computes on a triangulation with our spinform models. So these theories, field theories, can be arranged to produce a definition of a sum over triangulations, and therefore a model which is triangulation independent. The problem is that if we want to really sum of all triangulations, namely sum of all these Feynman diagrams, the sum is ill-defined, namely. So one should come up with a prescription in order to get non-perturbative information from these theories. Ideas, again, are in the market, but there is no clear understanding of such thing. Another issue, which I think is quite serious, is the fact that, in fact, there is an ambiguity here, too, because one can work with this field theory with only 5^5 interaction term, but one can equally well add infinitely many terms which are compatible with the symmetries required by this formulation. This is just something that one would immediately say if we were in the standard context of field theories or effective field theories. And adding these different terms, one can see that it's really related with discretization dependence again. Because essentially we have 5^5 here because we want to have 5-valent vertices which are dual to 4 simplices. So if we only have that, we will generate triangulations. If we add other terms, we will generate more general discretizations, cellular decompositions, which contain, for instance, an hypercube or different kinds of cells. So adding different lambdas here is very much linked to discretization dependence. So if we want to make sense of this, we also have to analyze why is it that we how to reduce this degree of ambiguity in these actions. This prescription, in fact, was inspired by something similar, that is, by matrix models. But the situation in matrix models is completely different. There, first of all, there is a prescription to obtain non-perturbative information, which is this double scaling limit. And also, there is evidence, or there is this belief, that there is universality. No matter what terms you add in an action which is similar to this one for matrix models, you get the same result. Such evidence is lacking in spin forms. And you know, so I'm presenting this to emphasize the problem, and I think the problem is very important, and people are thinking about these things, and the point is to point out that these issues are important and have to be analyzed. However, I'm going to take a different turn here. There is a kind of field theories which are extremely simple, for which all these ambiguities issues disappears. And these theories are topological quantum field theories. Topological quantum field theories, such as two plus one dimensional gravity, are theories where these ambiguities also appear, but they don't have any effect in the physical quantities. For instance, if one does the canonical quantization of 2+1 gravity, there are regularization ambiguities, very similar to the ones we find in 4 dimensions. However, they completely disappear when one analyzes physical amplitudes. The covariant quantization or the spin form representation, one does, again, the same thing as in 4 dimensions, and regulator independence is apparent. One finds that transition amplitudes are discretization independent. However, the problem is that these theories are too simple. These theories have only local degrees of freedom. So what the avenue I would like to explore is the possibility of working with these theories which have only local degrees of freedoms, but on the other hand, they are generally background independent and diff invariant, for which our techniques of loop quantum gravity work perfectly well, and for which there are no regularization dependence, to try to construct a background independent quantum field theory now with local degrees of freedom. And the formal idea would be, the heuristic idea is to make topology dynamical in some sense, to sum over topologies in some sense, to put the, so these topological theories are such that for a fixed topology of space-time, we have a finite number of degrees of freedoms. I would like to take this as a building block of a field theory with infinitely many degrees of freedoms by summing in an appropriate way over all topologies. This seems hopeless in four dimensions, very difficult in three dimensions, but it might be possible in 2D. And of course, two-dimensional field theory is too simple. I will try to introduce models where two-dimensional topology is important, but they are still models of four-dimensional field theory. So let me go back to 2 plus 1 gravity plus point particles for a moment. So 2 plus 1 gravity is topological, can be quantized without ambiguities. And it can also be quantized with no ambiguities, no regulator dependence, if we introduce topological defects as conical singularities representing particles. For a fixed number of these topological defects, everything goes through and one can define the physical inner product, physical amplitudes with no regulator dependence. One can also compute in this framework transition amplitudes, particle interactions of this form, in which one has one defect and one creates new defects in an interaction vertex. However, in the canonical formulation, this thing, we know how to interpret it. It has to do with the physical inner product between certain states in the Hilbert space, while these transition amplitudes do not have a clear physical interpretation. However, they are very natural and we can compute them. So some interpretations have been proposed, but I won't go into this direction here. So the heuristic idea of making topology dynamical, now I can phrase it a bit more precisely. When I talk about topology, I will be talking about topology of these defects. So why not to try to define a scalar product, a physical scalar product of an interactive field theory with infinitely many degrees of freedom by summing, so for when there is no particle creation, this diagrams define a well-defined physical inner product. Why not to try to define a physical inner product of a theory where the number of particles fluctuate, the number of particles can be anything, and then we have transition amplitudes between a certain metric and certain number of particles and another number of particles, using the fact that all these transition amplitudes are well-defined individually in the topological field theory. Well, I mean, immediately one realizes that this is a stupid idea because such a thing is ill-defined, it's divergent, the number of diagrams grows too much with the number of interactions, and such a thing does not have much chances of being well-defined. However, if we would be working with strings, then if these topological defects would be supported on worksheets, then this at least there's a chance, I mean, at least this sum, this heuristic sum over topologies, has much more chances to be well-defined because the number of diagrams grows only with the genus of the worksheet. And in fact, there are examples such as 2D BF theory where this sum converges. This is very different from a sum over worksheets in string theory because here we are assuming that we have a topological theory. Therefore, there are no moduli parameter in this sum. The only label of each one of these diagrams is the genus of the surface. And this is why we believe that this has a chance to be well-defined. And now, due to the fact that these are extended objects, the strings, maybe we can construct more interesting models by also putting some additional degrees of freedom on the string. In the case of the particle, one can do that, but one doesn't have much choice. One can put mass and spin. Now we have extended objects, and as we will see in a moment, much more interesting topological theories can be defined. So this is, for a moment, heuristic. Now I will present a concrete model in which these amplitudes can be computed and have a well-defined meaning. So this is based on a paper with John Baez that is appearing in the current issue of ATMP, and also in work in progress with Winston Fairbairn. Winston will give a seminar about this tomorrow in a parallel session. So these string theories, these topological theories of wall sheets coupled to BF theory are a natural generalization of the coupling of point particles to 2 plus 1 gravity. So I will start from by briefly reviewing this. So this is the action of 2 plus 1 gravity. One can add a topological defect along a wall line gamma by summing this term. E is the one form valued in the Lie algebra of SO3 or SO21. Often I will do things in the Euclidean sector. This is, in order to maintain, not to break the gauge invariance of 2 plus 1 gravity, one needs to add degrees of freedom on the particle wall line. And these are this Q, which is a function valued in the Lie algebra of SO3, and this function valued in the Lie algebra of SO3, P. The physical interpretation of these things will become clear in a moment. But if we're given this action, then we have the standard gauge transformations of 2 plus 1 gravity, and supplemented by appropriate transformations of the degrees of freedoms of the particle on the wall sheet. Now, the equations of motion are very simple. We have flat FF, flat connections everywhere except for the presence of conical singularities at the location of the particle. Then we have also torsion. The particle is source of torsion, as this equation shows, also at the location of the particle in these other two equations here. The equations of motion, flatness in the bulk, implies that the variable P, which I will call momentum from now on, remains in the same conjugacy class. This can be seen by this little diagram here. If the red thing is the particle's trajectory, I can write this loop, this contractible loop, which, because F is equal to zero in the bulk, the holonomy around this loop must be trivial, which implies a relationship between the P at X1 and the P at X2, which says that P is always in the same conjugacy class, implying that I can write P as some constant, which I call the mass, times a normalized vector in the Lie algebra. So in this theory, there is this parameter, which is the mass of the particles. Why is this a theory of particles? To see this, because these are particles coupled to the 2 plus 1 gravity, to the geometry, the theory has no local degrees of freedom. So in order to analyze the structure of the theory, one can go to a local neighborhood U of space-time, and choose gauge there. And in fact, we have to do that to get a more intuitive picture of what is going on here. If you do that, it's easy to see that E equal to zero, the tetrad equal to zero, A equal to zero, Q equal to a constant, X naught, and P equal to a constant, P naught, is a solution of the equations of motion. Now, all solutions of equations of motion are locally equivalent through gauge. One can do a gauge transformation by shifting the E field with this gauge parameter, eta, which is given by xi, where xi is a local coordinate system that I choose arbitrarily here. If we do so, then the triad becomes a flat triad, and now I have the intuition of flat space-time, at least in this local neighborhood. And the position, and the field q becomes the value of the coordinate x at the location of the particle, at the wall sheet, plus this constant, xi. And now it's easy to see that integrability conditions that come from the torsion equation imply that this quantity PQ commutator is constant, which is actually conservation of angular momentum, and it's easy to see that all this implies that the particle's trajectory in this coordinate system, in this gauge, is just a straight line parallel to the vector P, the momentum vector, and displaced by the quantity an impact parameter x naught, which is the amount of torsion at the location of the particle. So one can do the canonical quantization of this theory. One gets a kinematical Hilbert space. There are spin networks. So one does the 2 plus 1 decomposition in the standard way. One gets spin networks, which are open. At open ends of spin networks, they are the punctures, the topological defects, which are connected to the spin network by lines, which carry also spins. The spins of the spin network have the same geometric interpretation as spin networks, standard spin networks of 2 plus 1 gravity. The spins that reach the particles have to do with the value, the quantum value of this impact parameter we saw in the picture before. So, in fact, one can construct the physical Hilbert space. One can impose, regularize the constraint and impose them and get the physical Hilbert space without any regularization problem. And the end result, one can show that any state, for instance, for trivial topology, so assuming that there are no degrees of freedoms in the topology of, so the topology of the space-time is trivial, then one gets that any physical state, so physical states are equivalence classes of these kinematical states. I can label this equivalence class with this particular choice of graphs in which I have, let's say, for a fixed number of particles, say for 4 particles here, I have only 5 quantum numbers here, which have to do with certain Dirac observables that encode the relational position of these particles. So this is a genuine battery-independent system, and in fact, there are many conceptual issues that can be analyzed in this very simple, that are relevant for four-dimensional gravity, which can be analyzed here. The reason anything is equivalent to this for a fixed number of particles is that any piece of spin network can be contracted when one imposes, is equivalent to one can contract contractible regions of a spin network because F is equal to zero. This is perhaps a little bit technical if you're not familiar with it. So we have 2n-3 quantum numbers that encode the information about the relative location of these particles. So I needed to go through the geometric interpretation of particles because for the strings that I will introduce now, things are very similar. All the equations are a little bit more complicated. So now this was particles in 2 plus 1 gravity. Now we go to strings in four-dimensional BF theory. So the natural generalization of 2 plus 1 gravity to 4 dimensions is BF theory. So we have this field B is a two-form valued in the Lie of SO4 for simplicity, although this is not essential. So we have an SO4 BF theory. And we add a source term to the theory. Now, because we are in dimension 4 and because B is a two-form, the natural thing is to add a source supported on a two-dimensional worksheet. The gauge symmetries of the theory, if we add these degrees of freedoms on the worksheet, this Q, which is a one-form valued in the Lie algebra now, and a scalar valued in the Lie algebra of SO4, the gauge symmetries of the BF theory are not broken, and everything, they have to be extended, so B and A transform as usually, and P and Q transform appropriately so that this whole thing is gauge invariant. So the equations of motion now are very similar to that, those of 2 plus 1 gravity with point particles. We have F equal to 0 everywhere except at the location of the worksheet. We have torsion at the location of the worksheet. Now one can also see that the equations of motion, namely that F is zero outside in the bulk space-time, implies that P, the field P, must remain in the same conjugacy class as we move around the worksheet. So P is of the form some constant tau times a normalized element of the Lie algebra of SO4. So this constant here has units of tension. We call it the string tension. Now, if we, again, we play the same game, we go to a local neighborhood, this is a solution, and now we do a gauge transformation by choosing a gauge. Now gauge transformations are given by, these translations are given by this one forms valued in the Lie algebra of SO4. I construct a one form valued in the Lie algebra of SO4 with the coordinate system XI in this local neighborhood. When I do this, I get a B, which is simple and flat. So it can be written as E, where E is a flat tetrad. So I get this in, now I have the intuition of a flat Minkowski background, if you want, in this coordinate system. And Q becomes this, and an analysis of the integrability conditions as done before. This is just repeating the same thing. Yields to the, gives the result that these strings are planes dual to the plane defined by P and located at, in any position that I can translate. So locally, these strings are not allowed to oscillate, which is very much is something that we should have expected because we are dealing with a topological theory. So there are no degrees of freedoms associated to. So if you want, we can distort these planes in any way by doing gauge transformations, but these distortions are just pure gauge. So these are extremely simple theories. And this is, of course, related to the reason, the fact that we can quantize them exactly. So one can do the canonical analysis, assuming that the topology of the space-time is sigma cross R, and the worksheet is a strain cross R, or S1 cross R. The constraints are the standard constraints of BF theory with certain matter sources. Now we have a source of torsion in the Gauss law, and the curvature constraint has a source of that has to do with the presence of the string. In addition, we have other constraints which have to do with the degrees of freedom of the string. This forms the second. There are second-class constraints when one has to go to the Dirac bracket, choose appropriate variables. When one does so, things simplify quite a lot, and we get the standard commutation relations of E and A of loop quantum gravity, so to say. And we get, in terms of this angular momentum, this J variable, we get commutation relation. We see that we get this commutation relation where this is the structure constant of SO4, so these J's are generators of SO4. So observe that this J is what appears as a source of the Gauss law, so it shouldn't be too surprising for you to see that the kinematical Hilbert space of the theory is given by spin networks on the bulk, which have open ends that finish on the string with a certain value of a spin, which has to do with the amount of torsion that the B field has at that particular location. So these are the kinematical states. Physical Hilbert space can be defined, and this is the subject of the talk of Winston. He will talk about progress concerning the regularization of the Hamiltonian constraint and implementation of the Hamiltonian constraint, where we show how this regularization ambiguities disappear. We don't know in detail the structure of the physical Hilbert space yet, but it seems that knotting, for instance, would be one of the physical degrees of freedoms in these things, and in particular, and of course, we'll still have the relational position given by the connectivity between different components of strings with spin networks, as in the case of particles. So there is an underlying notion of locality in these things that comes from the bulk BF theory. I just want to stress this for what is coming now, because now. These things are very simple, but the fact that these are extended objects suggests that perhaps we can do more and put some more interesting degrees of freedoms on top of these strings, on top of these topological defects. And this is work in progress with Merced Montesinos. So we know that Jan Mills in two dimensions has no degrees of freedoms. In particular, it can be written as a BF type of action, if we are given a volume form, two-form lambda, it's easy to see that if we integrate over E, we get the standard form of Jan-Mills in two dimensions for a metric which has to satisfy this relation, a metric such that the natural volume form of the metric is lambda. Now, this theory that does not have local excitations, yet is background dependent. If you do the canonical analysis, you have Hamiltonian, which is not vanishing. And this is obvious because of the presence of this background structure we put from the outside. Now, this string, coupled to BF theory provide a way of restoring background independence by coupling these two-dimensional Jahn-Mills theories to the worksheets. And the thing is quite natural. In fact, if we write, if we replace in the previous action, if we construct a lambda, a volume 2 form, in terms of the B field and the P field in this way, we obtain this action, which has interesting properties. The gauge symmetries are very similar to that, those of the pure topological defects of the previous, of the theory I described before. But now, we have the equations of motion show that there is an interesting back reaction between the Jahn-Mills fields and the bulk BF degrees of freedom. In particular, we have that the curvature is zero everywhere, but is singular at the position of except at the position of the worksheet, where there is a singularity whose strength is modulated by the electric field square. So we have, so to say, an effective tension of these strings, which is proportional to the square of the electric field. So the canonical structure is very similar, this is part of the work we did with Merced. The theory is consistent, so one can do the canonical analysis, compute the constraint algebra, and see that the constraint is close. Moreover, one obvious thing is that the Gauss law of Jahn-Mills implies that the electric field square is constant on each connected component of the worksheet. The constraint algebra closes with field-dependent structure constants. So this is perhaps an interesting example, which is simpler than what happens in gravity, of course. So here, the structure, if you look at the constraint algebra, you have structure functions that depend on E square. So essentially, on a given solution, E square is constant, so this become constant. So that's why I wrote field-dependent structure constants. Well, the counting of degrees of freedom gives zero. There are no local degrees of freedoms. And the strings can be seen as flux lines of Jahn-Mills electric field, which back react on the BF bulk with this energy density. The kinematic Hilbert space is immediate. We can construct it exactly following the same prescriptions we used in the previous case. And so the states are these spin networks in the bulk, which are dual to the strings. Now the strings are really flux lines of Jahn-Mills field. So these strings are Wilson loops labeled by representations of the appropriate gauge group we are working with. For instance, I've chosen here integers, assuming that the gauge group is compact. Integers that label the nth eigenvalue of the electric field operator in two dimensions. The physical Hilbert space can be, we believe that the physical Hilbert space can be obtained in without any problems, although this is something we haven't looked in details, using the techniques that Winston will tell you about tomorrow. And the theory is topological, so regularization ambiguities should not have any effect. So we know the theory exists and is well-defined, or we strongly believe it's well-defined. For a fixed worksheet, what we need to understand and study in detail is the computation of amplitudes. And I believe this is also something that can be done because of the simplicity of the theory. So we need to understand, compute these amplitudes to explore the heuristic motivation we had at the beginning of the possibility of summing over these topologies to define a theory where there is no fixed worksheet and where we presumably can recover infinitely many degrees of freedom. Another observation is that the worksheet amplitudes that we have here are precisely the ones of a Jahn-Mills theory in any dimension. In fact, 2D Yamil theory has a lot of Yamil theory in any dimension. Once we do this, you can see that for worksheet, the amplitude, the quantum amplitude will go like the exponential of the area of the worksheet times the eigenvalue E square of the Yang-Mills field, which is a property, generic property of Yang-Mills in any dimension, as, for instance, has been shown by many people, but recently by Florian Conradi in some of his papers. Moreover, if we consider worksheet intersections, which I don't want to do in terms of the original motivation, but even if we try to include intersections, it seems that the only consistent way to do this is to require also that the Gauss law, so to say the four-dimensional Gauss law is satisfied, and that the electric fields, which are constant on each component of worksheet components, must satisfy compatibility conditions at the intersection, which are of the same kind as four-dimensional Yamil series. So, so this might be important for trying to couple spin formals of four-dimensional BF theory. Of four-dimensional gravity based on four-dimensional BF theory to Yamil series, and I can say more at the end. But for the moment, let me go ahead. And so we can show that starting from this basic theories of topological defects coupled to BF theory, we can add interesting physical interesting degrees of freedoms, such as Yamil fields. In fact, the possibilities are much larger than that. I will say something in a moment. The worksheet topological models are 4D models. They have a notion of locality, even though they are not local degrees of freedom. So I can tell about relational information of where these worksheets are located. They are physical observables, perhaps encoding knottiness also. For a given space-time manifold, there are finitely many degrees of freedoms, and these models are renormalizable in the sense that there are no ambiguities in their quantization. So the hope, or what we would like to do or explore, is the possibility of implementing a sum over worksheets to construct a background independent quantum field theory with local degrees of freedoms. And as I said, in two, there are some very simple examples in 2D BF theory where these sums at least converge. But of course, this is not the only thing we need. We need more than these things converge. We need these things to define a physical inner product. We need these things to be positive. We need lots of properties which have to be studied in detail. So let me finish by saying that there are many other things one can put on these worksheets by keeping this requirement that the theory constructed is a topological theory. Theory where degrees of freedoms are only encoded in the topology of these worksheets. For instance, one can add BF theory and certain kinds of particles to these worksheets. And one can also add a tetrad in this way. And when one does this, one obtains a very funny model which has interesting resemblances with general relativity. In particular, one can show that one can argue that even though this is still a topological theory, there are no local degrees of freedoms on the worksheet. Something like Einstein's equations are satisfied. But more details about this will be presented in the paper with Marcet. So this is all I had to say.
Thank you very much, Alex. Okay, so time for questions. Comments? Lee?
Well, I kind of wanted to introduce you. These are very beautiful models, they're very interesting, and they're very, very worth of study. But I think you open yourself up in the opening remarks to an ambiguity about the word ambiguities. Mm-hmm. So, perturbatively non-normalizable quantum field theories are ambiguous because of the fixed number of coupling constants, that is to say, Jones constant plus cosmological constant, one cannot define perturbatively well-defined physical observable quantities.
Mm-hmm.
Group field theory with the quadratic term and the fifth order term is ultraviolet finite. And therefore, whatever computations of physical observables you can make, for example, using the gravity formalism that people use to construct the graviton propagator, now the the three graviton and the graviton interaction, these are going to be finite, well-defined physical quantities just with those two properties.
Yes. But the point is that I can come up with another field theory, because I never talked to you, in which I have lambda naught, a lambda one different from zero, and I will get a different result.
I agree with you that there is a possible choice of other interactions which introduce other parameters, and there's an ambiguity in that sense, but this is not the same as the inability to make predictions that comes about in perturbatively non-normalizable theories.
Well, maybe it's not exactly the same, but I have a bag of infinitely many theories, and I have to choose one. Who tells me which one is the good one? That's the point.
So you always say that you agree with me.
Right? Yes,
I. But you are saying that in practice, however, it is like having infinitely many theories, and you choose one of them. Therefore, in practice, the problem is similar. That's what you said. Is that
exactly. Yes.
But isn't this a situation in which one uses? Generally, I think it's an ambiguous theory because you can write nice equations, you can write that a huge number of all things. And the electromagnetism is an ambiguous theory, exactly the same way. There are also requirements. The sun model.
Yeah, but there.
What do you want if you want to fix up a single?
Well, in fact, you could add to the standard model dimension 5 and higher operators. You could do that. But the thing is that when you do predictions, this will not make any difference. So that's why, even though this ambiguity exists, we don't care much about it in those contexts. But I don't see the thing happening here.
Well, I simply realize that what Alex has said is that yes, general relativity is ambiguous because you could have quantity and there's going to be another coupling constant and so on. And in fact, all these theories there are played at one stage. And it was experimental falsification that is really get the intelligence for and more for general relativity. So in the same spirit, one could actually add these terms, construct those theories, and then it would be a question of experimental falsification. But a priori, they are as opposed to general relativity, since we do not have experimental, we do not even work out experimental consequences, but they are worked out. And then some of them will be experimentally falsified. But until then, I think Alex's point seems to be that considering lambda not equal to zero is as good or as bad as considering lambda not equal to zero.
So, yes, I didn't understand very well your question. Now I see better. Of course, I mean, there might be a certain choice. When the choice is finite, we can try and explore all the possible models, and there would be different theories with different predictions, and presumably we can look which is the one that best describes nature. The problem is when this choice is too large and we cannot explore all the...
We haven't found one yet. So we don't have the problem of having too many quantities. We have zero. Not infinite.
Well, I think the two problems might be related. I think that thinking about these issues might help us find at least one, or finally, or